Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Friday, the 3rd of August. Very nice to have you on what here in Albany is just a downpour of a day. I assume through most of the region it's going to be very, very wet all day today. But we're glad you're keeping dry with us. And even if you're out in the rain, you know, hopefully we keep you dry in some way. You don't even know what that means. Good morning. Welcome. It's nice to have you all here. Let me introduce the whole group to you, and we'll get started on the news of the day for this Friday. David Soares is with us. He is the Albany County District Attorney and reporting for duty. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm good. All's good. So far, I mean, don't screw it up.
Yeah. Lots of pressure.
That's right. Aaron Pasitti is here. He is a Siena College professor of economics, and we are always pleased when he joins us. Good morning.
Good morning, Joe.
How are you?
Doing well.
You seem very, very calm today. Is everything all right?
Oh, yeah.
All right, good.
I like the rain. I grew up in Cleveland. So.
Oh, all right. So that makes sense.
Nostalgia.
Judith Eng joins us. She is the former regional administrator for the Environmental Protection Agency, you know, back when there was one. And currently, your position is what? How do you describe your current position?
I currently work for a little nonprofit organization on climate change issues, Institute for Governance and Sustainable Development. They're based in Washington. And then I do a ton of volunteer environmental advocacy work. But don't call me with your latest environmental problem. Sorry, yeah. Everyone calls.
But your dance card is full.
Right, I'm not taking on new patients.
I thought having a doctor in the family.
Yes, right. Please, no.
I can't believe I just said that. But
I understand.
There's a lot.
I think even the other people understand that. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say, "Don't call it a comeback." You know, I thought we were going with a little rap this morning.
No, it's not
David,
a comeback.
LL Cool Judith.
Yeah. That's going to stick.
We all know she'll be the secretary in the next administration.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah. Nah, I'm circling the drain.
I have not used the straw the entire week.
Yay, you know, I'm proud of you. Plastic straws. No, very plastic. Good.
Good man. All right. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Pleased, I'm sure.
I'm pleased. Hopefully you're pleased.
Pleased, I'm sure.
Yes, absolutely. Good morning. So this is all good. Let me introduce my brothers here. We have a studio audience this morning. We have four people in the studio, one of whom I'm related to. It's Phil Donahue. He's my oldest brother. And so I'm 50. What are you, 68? Mm-hmm. You'll be 69 next year, right? 60. That's usually how that works. You go up a year.
Yeah, 68.
All right. So get up here and introduce everybody in the room.
Well, I'm glad to introduce three of my friends that have been coming up to Saratoga with me on these August trips for about 20-some years.
Wow.
So we're here to try to enjoy the horses in the rain.
And who do we have?
We have Gary Filarecki. Formerly from Buffalo, New York, now living in Elizabeth City, North Carolina. Matt Wood, he's a farmer, doesn't look like a farmer, a gentleman farmer.
And who's on base?
And we also have with us Mark Malin. Mark is a retired attorney in Elizabeth City, and we're all glad to be here with such an august group.
Yes. Well, thank you. Very nice. And whenever you want to say anything, just tap me on the shoulder, and I'll determine whether I'll let you have the mic or not.
Okay.
Finally.
Yeah, that's right. All right, so let's get started. Thank you to everybody. I know we usually say how cold it is in here, but is it very, very warm in here today?
Yeah.
It's warmish.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys in here.
Yeah, that's probably the problem.
The really one day I wear warm. A long sleeve shirt yeah. is the day geez, it's warm.
I don't know. It was warm when we came in, though.
I know.
Are you attributing this to climate change?
Yes.
Okay.
I am.
It's the damn straws,
yeah.
I tell you.
And I know that Sarah LaDuke is listening to the show in from her perch, and she'll go right out and make it a little cooler.
It'll make it a little cooler indeed. Yes, it's very warm in here. But that does not mean we're not going to have a great show. So let's start with what is going on in the world. And so the president said the Russian threat is real. Is real. The Trump officials say, vowing to protest U.S. elections. Top national security officials vow Thursday to defend American elections against what they call real threats from Russia, only weeks after President Trump seemed to accept President Vladimir Putin's denials of interference during a summit meeting in Finland. After the meeting, Mr. Trump said he had not meant to endorse Mr. Putin's denial of election meddling, but insisted that the culprit behind the intrusion could be other people. A few days later, he asserted that the idea of any Russian meddling was
a hoax.
That's right. Yes, a hoax. But the men and women charged with detecting and defending against any threats to the American political process showed no such ambivalence. They bluntly said that Russia was behind a pervasive campaign to weaken America's democracy and influence the 2018 election. By the way, that 2018 election is coming up in under 90 days. Okay.
A couple of things here.
Yes, sir.
The first is, you know, you had in the White House these characters, you know, coming in and saying, yes, this Russian thing is very real. You had the people calling it the, you know, we're in the cross, democracy is in the crosshairs and all the rest. Standing there, but I didn't hear him say anything, was none other than one of the worst miscreants in the administration, John Bolton. You could tell from his mustache who he, which one he was over there. Now, you had the president as much as a few hours ago basically saying it's still a hoax. You, now you say because they keep sending you different messages. So you have an invitation to the White House. The news media is all saying they got in the these experts got in the president's face. But they would not have been in the White House had the president not signed off on the idea of creating this discordance, the idea that you have one team saying one thing and him, we think that the Russians and he have some reason for colluding, are together. So that's where I'm coming from. I think that the news media has gotten this one wrong.
Well, there are two competing realities. You've got the heads of these agencies stating the obvious, that there was Russian interference, and then you have the president doing these growingly, you know, aggressive, disturbing big public rallies where he just kind of riffs for an hour and a half. But I, you know, I think
last night was, I mean, they're all disturbing, but last night was really disturbing.
Yeah, it really was.
And until we're here next week, and
so that was even really, really disturbing, right?
Yeah, and I know the media is criticized for, you know, showing these rallies from beginning to end. And I often just see the snippets, kind of the worst points. I think every American should watch one of these from the beginning to the end. Just to see how serious are the threat to democracy is from the president. But I think, you know, separate from the, you know, the dual realities, although I don't think Kirstjen Nielsen has a whole lot of credibility because of her role in separating families. I just can't take her seriously as someone who actually cares about the country.
Right.
But I think the real issue is, what are we doing to stop the interference? And there are kind of two tracks. One is the voting machines, the voting rolls, and then the hacking into campaign emails that happened with the DNC. We know it just happened with Senator Claire McCaskill. A lot of that falls to state governments to make sure that the machines and the voting rolls are safe. And then on top of that, you have the bigger issue, which predated Trump, which is voter suppression and how hard it is for a lot of people to vote. So this is all kind of coming together, and it's not like there's a lot of time before the midterms to address this. Final point, I read recently that New York State was going to up its computer capabilities. They're putting out an RFP. Well, it's a little late to, you know, to be doing that now with the November election around the corner.
Well, do you remember how long it, and you, of course, the answer is yes, you do. But remember how long it took New York State to get their act together after the 2000 election?
When yes,
they,
I do.
I mean, the change of, they, it's not something that moves quickly.
I think the Board of Elections at the state and local level is in another century when it comes to technology. They need to sit down with, like, you know, FedEx and Amazon and figure this out.
Well, there's another thing that goes on here. With a divided legislature, as you know, the upper house, otherwise known as the Republicans, aren't very anxious to clean up our elections process. They got there the way they got there. They don't want to change it.
Right.
You know, when it comes to putting on the brakes, they're not there. However, I will say this, Judith. Let's remember that the Democrats also got there under the old system.
Yeah, no offense, David, but I think incumbents are a problem with giving us voter integrity. God forbid you move.
Well, you know what? The next drink I have, I now want two strokes.
Okay. You're doubling down there.
It was a shot across the bow.
It was a shot.
It was two things here. The first is the president and who is often characterized as a person who cannot stick to a script. I think if we've learned anything over the last year and a half, it's this. He can't stick to a script when he is pontificating on something that is of importance to the country, right? He can't stick to a particular policy and articulate it in a way that is effectively communicating it with the country. But when it comes to his own personal needs, he is a master at crafting and branding, right? So this whole issue with the hoax, right, and its continued in staying on message, that isn't for us. That is not. It's not for your listeners. It's not for the people in this room. That message is for that prospective juror that is going to be sitting in that box amongst 11 other people who will ultimately make a decision about him. And as long as he and his people continue to parrot the same message, it is injecting a bit of doubt. And we talked about this before. The prosecutor in this instance, although the prosecutor has all the authority and the power to uncover information that would otherwise be not disclosed to the average citizen, the prosecutor is at a disadvantage because the prosecutor cannot speak with the kind of freedom that, let's say, the target of his investigation, which we all know is are members of this administration and members of his campaign. So that's one issue. Now, what I think is also happening here is that for the professionals who are actually doing the work, right, for the men and women that you saw yesterday at that press conference, they understand and they have an obligation to communicate effectively to the public and to restore some sense of confidence. So this administration, what you're seeing here is a conflict of two objectives, right? One is the president in his own self-interest trying to maintain a message that and try to destroy the credibility of this prosecution. But two, it's also the people who are actually the professionals within the administration understanding that they have an obligation to inform and maintain public confidence.
Question, Mr. District Attorney, question. Do you think that Trump orchestrated what we saw yesterday?
I absolutely believe that he did. Mm-hmm. And if he didn't orchestrate it, the professionals within the organization had a lot to do with bringing him to that point.
Yeah. Well, I think he did orchestrate it, and I think those people who think that they demanded the right to go to the White House and speak their minds are just really having it put over on them.
Oh, absolutely.
Aaron. So I've got 2 points. One is building on something Alan said, and that is polarization in U.S. politics has been going on for decades with the rise of dark money, buying candidates, you know, primarily on the right, and those views have shifted further and further and further to the right. So that leads to a very dysfunctional government, governments that can't agree. There's no compromise on any major issue. So we've been seeing that for decades. I think what Russia's doing is just adding more fuel to that fire that's been going on for a very long time.
I think that's a brilliant point.
Russia's just capitalizing on that. Yeah. They've seen this going on for decades, and they're trying to figure out how to work that to their advantage. So that's the one thing, is that it's not just Russia who's doing this. We've been doing this to ourselves with, you know, whether it's gerrymandering or the Citizens United decision in making, you know, the money in politics a major issue that really eliminates the middle ground.
And confirmation bias when people are out there looking for information.
So will the gentleman stand for a question on point one?
Did we get to point two yet?
We didn't get to point two.
Okay. That's good.
But go ahead.
We only have a minute, but go ahead.
Are you sure that with the Koch brothers having this dissonance with the president, that things are things that the Republicans as a whole are moving to the right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I know that Trump doesn't like the Koch brothers, and the Koch brothers don't really like Trump for what he's done. But, you know, there's a lot of other players in this. So can I leave point two as a cliffhanger?
Well, you can do, if you can do, can you do point two in a minute?
Sure.
Okay.
I've asked myself why. What is Russia's vested interest in disrupting American democracy?
Yes.
There's a goal here, and I think their goal is they want the U.S. to, and other industrialized countries to be focusing on things other than Russia's military freedom to take back territories that they think are rightfully theirs. And what does Trump get out of buying into that, since he's really been blackballed because of his spotty financial record from a lot of international banks? He's turning to the Russian oligarchs for a lot of money for his project. So it's a win-win for both of them. It's a lose-lose. Well, it's a lose for the U.S., and I don't know how the Russian population feels.
Nor will we.
How was that? Was that a minute?
That was great.
And
that was
perfect. 4 seconds left to go.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, we still have time. Alan Chartok is here. Judith Enk, Aaron Pacitti, David Soares, and a whole lot of guys from the South, which isn't usually the case. Here,
so real Yankees.
Yeah. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We will continue our conversation, but we do welcome you for your short and sweet letters. Get to the point, and please read them over so we know what you're saying, WAMC.org. You got that. Prince's bumper music. Very nice. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. It is the 3rd of August and 35 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock. We have a studio filled with experts, and we are talking about a lot of cool issues. Alan has a letter or two, and then we'll move on to other stuff.
You could have stopped with a letter.
Oh, I got another one, too. We have one from one of our guests.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So from your guest, we hear a question. When Trump goes to a rally, how does he assure... I thought it was another word. How does he assure he has a favorable audience? Well, that's what the guys...
How do you screen them?
Well, you screen them. You know who to ask, and they do
But what
it,
if somebody gets up and says, you know, like, you know...
Take him out and beat him up.
That's what he'll say to them.
Yeah, he did it already.
There was one protester last night, but I've also always noticed that there's probably two African Americans among
a
thousand,
put it right,
and they're right behind Trump.
It's the only time we will ever get, you know, front row seating at any event. if we're holding blacks for Trump.
Blacks for Trump. That is an amazing movement.
I watch that
sign a lot.
I actually look at the screen and I'm like, oh my God, there's the unicorn. Somebody managed to get the unicorn and put him in the front row.
And I assume you want to go talk to them, right?
I'm sitting here and I'm like, where did they find the two people?
Well, it shouldn't be plural.
It should be
black for Trump.
Well, oh. Bessie Smith said it best. She's saying there are lots of ways to sell it, baby.
Let me tell you, I don't know what... I have no idea. I don't even know if these people know where they're going, what they're holding, but I would love to have Mr. Acosta just grab someone with that sign.
And have a conversation. Yeah.
The first time I saw it was during one of his rallies. When he was running, and they put this gentleman right behind him, and he had his sign, and he kept on holding it. I couldn't pay attention to what the president was saying, because in my mind I'm like, who are you? Where did they find you, and what is he saying that is appealing to you?
During the campaign, they've also had, they've shown this on a lot of the comedy shows where it'll say women for Trump or blacks for Trump, and it's white men holding the signs, you know, but you just see the visual of the
sign.
You
see the sign.
The other letter.
The other letter from Ben. Make cars great again? EPA.
Mm. Oh, we have it. We're all over that one.
Yeah. Trump plans to scrap Obama's plans to increase miles per gallon from 54 miles per gallon to 37 miles per gallon. Calls it make cars great again? July in Vermont, hottest month ever, also attacks California's plans to reduce climate warming. And that's from Ben.
It's as if we picked this issue for Judith to talk about. So let's... it's as if this were planned. So the big story... Yes, thank you, Judith. The big story, of course, on car emissions is... Well, unfortunately, I don't have the link.
Hold I got on. It.
No, I know you got it. I think I have it. I was going to set it up, but go ahead.
Well, as your listeners know, there's been an assault on Obama-era environmental regulations since the beginning. Over 54 environmental regulations have either been repealed, delayed, or in the process. And repealing these fuel efficiency standards is truly one of the worst, especially during this hot summer when big chunks of California are on fire.
Yes. My question for you was just, and this is a general question before we get into the nuts and bolts of this, but when we say weakening one of President Barack Obama's signature policies, how bad were things before President Obama? So are we just going back to that point, or are we going back even further?
No, over the last 25 years, fuel efficiency standards have slowly gotten better with Republican and Democratic presidencies. What this proposed regulation does is it freezes the fuel efficiency requirement to the 2021 level, which is 37 miles per gallon. The Obama administration wanted to up that to 54 miles per gallon. So we're not going backwards, but we're freezing, you know, the trajectory of what the improvement should have been. And if you look at the auto industry, that is a great example of where regulations prompt innovation, not the other way around.
It's so true.
And you can even look at, remember the auto companies opposing seatbelts.
And Ralph Nader effect.
Yeah. And now virtually everyone puts on a seatbelt and lives are saved. Well, and EPA has a whole lab in Michigan that just looks at fuel efficiency, how cars and trucks run. And over time, the standards have gotten better. So what does that mean for us? It means we all save money at the pump. If this proposal goes through, consumers will spend billions more at the pump, not to mention the dramatic increase in greenhouse gases and other pollutants that cause asthma, heart disease, respiratory disease. The only people happy with this new proposal is the oil industry. The car industry is actually divided.
They're divided. Yep. And they have a little problem in California because the California legislature, as we all know, stays way ahead of the U.S. And this last round basically tries to clear all of that up so California can't have a primacy.
Right. I'm glad you mentioned California because it also affects New York. So when the Clean Air Act was first adopted 40-plus years ago, remember the smog in California and remember the George Washington Bridge in Manhattan on certain summer days. You couldn't see the bridge.
Can't get across it, but that's a different
thing. True. And the toll is very high compared to the Tappan Zee. But because the California air pollution situation was so severe, when Congress adopted the Clean Air Act, they said Congress can be stronger. So you can either have the federal standards or match California. And on cars, 13 or 14 states, including New York and Massachusetts, match the California requirements. And the Trump administration wants to do something completely unprecedented, which is knock out California and say you can only follow the Trump regulations.
First of all, I just want to say that before Joe introduced the subject and threw it to you, he said I wanted to get into the nuts and bolts, which I just thought was inappropriate. He should have said, I want to get into the weeds. Right? Because we're talking about environment.
Or the electric battery.
We just want to talk. Yeah. Right? We want to get into the weeds. But my understanding was that in order to get the automotive industry on board, President Obama, it wasn't a requirement. There was no formal legislation that was passed. But part of the auto bailout was an agreement that, that they would sign on to reduce, you know, fuel dependency moving forward. And so, you know, and as a matter of fact, I think, you know, consumers, this is a feature that consumers are demanding. And so the auto manufacturers are really responding to the marketplace demands. And here we have a person who is completely devoid of all senses as to what, you know, the country is looking for and projecting forward and basically, you know, kowtowing.
And in his 70s, shame on him because of his children and his grandchildren and their grandchildren and all the people who are coming. I can only brag about one thing, and that is getting here, coming down from Great Barrington to here, my Prius got 67 miles a gallon. That's
oh, you can
good.
Brag about
and you're gonna and it's great you are driving a Prius. There will be fewer hybrid cars available on the market. When I, not to humble brag, when I bought my Prius the first year it came out, there was a waiting list.
Yeah, and
probably when you got yours, you got it quickly because
in a day.
And part of that is because of these fuel efficiency standards that the auto companies have to come out with more hybrids, more electric vehicles. But those will be reduced if this regulation survives legal challenge. And thankfully, Attorney General Barbara Underwood and Attorney General Maura Healey of Massachusetts are part of a coalition of 19 state attorneys general that are challenging this in court. And I think they're going to win. Because the rationale for rolling this back is really flimsy.
So on top of this, you have Trump officials linking fuel economy rules to deadly crashes.
Right, right.
So
why not? So right. they're
why not? So the headline yeah. in the Times says Trump officials link fuel economy rules to deadly crashes. Period. Experts are skeptical.
Yeah, it's junk science, and yeah. also what they're pushing is not. That, oh, if you have a smaller car, if you're in a Prius rather than a giant SUV. I mean, there's actually some logic to that. If you're in your little Prius on Central Avenue and a big SUV hits you.
Isn't that bootstrapping? That's really stretching.
On the other hand, it's wrong because what the Trump folks are pushing is that you buy new cars.
Let's get new Humvees. Let's everybody get Humvees.
Aaron, go ahead.
Nobody walks into a car dealership and says, show me the car with the least fuel efficient standards. So, like David said, it's something consumers want.
That
was hyperbole. But the point is that there is a huge difference to consumers in the cost of a car and the cost of owning a car for 10 years. Mm-hmm. So if car companies can produce cars with lower fuel economy standards, they could arguably lower the price. But all that does is, as Judith pointed out, raises the amount that people are going to have to spend over the life cycle of the car by buying more gas. So I think consumers probably intuitively understand that. The whole report about it's going to reduce traffic fatalities by, 12,700 or something. The argument was that, if you have better fuel economy standards, people are going to drive more.
Right.
People's desire to drive. I mean,
maybe teenagers who just got their
right. Permit. Or instead of maybe flying from Albany to Cleveland, people might drive if fuel standards are higher. But the point is that most people drive as much as they need to. That effect is at the margin.
They call this the rebound effect.
The
correct?
Rebound effect, right? Yes. And economists are very skeptical. One study that I saw this morning was that for every extra, for a $1 decrease in the price of a car, consumers drive an extra tenth of a mile. So that effect's very small.
What are people going to do? Drive around the block three times?
You know what causes crashes?
This is the point, is that they drive
smog.
As much as they need.
Smog causes crashes.
Yeah.
There's another point, I think. There's another point that one could make. If you have larger cars and they crash into my Prius, you're going to get creamed, right, as we used to say in the waves. However, if you have all lightweight cars...
creamed in the waves?
It's an arms race.
Another manic Monday. Yeah. Go ahead.
What?
It's an arms race, is that if you have bigger, heavier cars, then
and they crash
people who Prius, drive smaller, lighter cars are...
going to get creamed.
Inward.
Are you going to say you can't have trucks on the road because we're all in small cars? I mean, the logic is really tortured the way... And actually, this is not just an EPA regulation. It's also Department of Transportation, and the word is that Department of Transportation was in a huge fight with EPA, and the White House intervened and sided with transportation. But it's mythical.
When you're relying on the science editor of the National Enquirer, I think, we're in no man's land.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We will be right back.
I made up my mind when I was a young girl. I've been given this one world.
I won't worry it away.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. The music we're listening to, that was Sarah Bareilles, Many the Miles. And what we're doing is we're playing selections from President Obama's, we're doing President Obama's playlist. President Obama turns 57 tomorrow.
Oh.
And we are going to have Obama Day on the show today. And we're talking to all kinds of people who have worked with the former president. Dan Pfeiffer is going to be with us later on. Backdory Stein is going to be here. We're also going to talk to Andrew Schaefer, who's written a mystery novel where Obama and Joe Biden are the sleuths. And Brian Abrams has written an oral history of the administration. So we'll have all of those folks
fantastic.
On later on in the show. That's why we're playing the.
I'm really upset playlist. That there's not more punk on Obama's playlist because I think this is a really good time. For a lot of underground punk bands who actually have something to say, much like they did in the late 70s.
Well,
so shame on him.
Joe's brother headlines an underground punk band here. That's why they're all here.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's exactly.
Yeah, they failed to tell you that they all have pink mohawks.
It's but what, radio.
But what do you think is on President Trump's playlist?
Oh.
Oh, now you're just stirring the pot. That's nice. All right, Alan, you have letters.
Oh, I do. Thank you, Joe.
You're welcome. I'm here to help.
So, Rich says Dixiecrats. Let's hear from our out of town guests. If one might be willing to speak, it'd be interesting to get their take on things. Well, thank you, Rich Guthrie of the Bird Program.
Oh, that's Rich.
Yeah,
the Rich.
Rich Guthrie is always
anyone
making as much trouble as possible.
Yeah.
Keith.
They'll figure that one out. We'll move on. And
Keith,
then we'll...
Keith says, Republican or on Republican violence, Koch brothers versus Trump. In the current important election cycle, I do enjoy seeing Republican-on-Republican violence. The Republicans are now biting the hand that feed them for all these years. Will this lead to the party fracturing even further? The Koch brothers are nefarious, but they do make a good point about Trump's horrible trade policies. Many Americans will be hurt by his policies, including myself. My industry is looking at 25% tariffs starting in September, and that is from Keith. I don't know what his industry is.
Aaron is reacting.
Yeah. The Koch brothers really like Republicans. They just don't like Trump.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, so yes, you can look at the president and where, you know, his money comes from. But when you look at Congress, that's a very different beast. And they might come out and publicly say, yes, I support Trump on this. But behind the scenes, they might be doing something very different. And they're the ones who are drawing a lot of the money from the Koch brothers. So it's not just the president.
Yeah. But I'm always trying to get inside Trump's mind, always hard, but trying to get and say, okay, what is his political advantage in taking on the Koch brothers popularly? In other words, what is it that he gains from doing that?
Well, I think everything Trump does is his own self-interest.
Yes, and so what is it here?
Yeah. Well, I think it's... I think he is not upset that the Republican Party is essentially dead. I don't think we have a Republican Party in this country anymore. You have Trump and his Trump base. Look at Congress. Do you think Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan agree with most of what Trump is doing?
I don't think they agree, but I think they are Republican stalwarts, and I think they're also they understand politics and they understand the mood of the country. And you know, the most powerful bully pulpit in the world is, you know, right now this man when he pounds. I mean, look at the fools that were at his rally the other day, right? I mean, I think you know, we're mistaking. We are mistaking, you know, loyalty for, you know, survival and preservation of the status quo. These people want to be in power. The Kochs see this particular president as a man who threatens that power moving forward. As far as Donald Trump's brain, first of all, that's like going to Universal and getting on a very frightening ride. You know, secondly, I think that his attack on the Koch brothers just happens to be something instinctual where he feels that there is a threat to him personal or some kind of slight.
I think Trump would welcome Koch brothers money.
Well, he takes any money.
He'll take any money. It just so happens that the Koch brothers publicly came out and said we need a more intellectual presidential candidate before the election. So I think he would gladly take it. And since they're not giving it to him, he's trying to figure out a way to spin this. And the way he's spinning it is saying, hey, listen, I'm not beholden to special interests. I've denied Koch brothers money. I'm a maverick. I'm an independent politician. And that appeals to his base. So I take issue with the fact that you called them fools, because I think they are people who have very legitimate economic concerns, who have been beaten down with stagnant wages and, you know, a lack of economic mobility. And they see this as, well, the Democrats were useless when they were in office. The Republicans didn't help us when they were in office. So let's turn to somebody who's an outsider.
Let me be more specific. You're absolutely right. There are people who are have been victimized by globalism, and certainly they've listened to his siren's call. I am talking about those individuals, the conspiracy theorists who are sitting with the Q, you know, shirts and banners, who are they're literally crazy. OK. And his appeal to those folks is very powerful. I think if you're the Koch brothers and, you know, these let's be very clear here. These are people who have skillfully elected, you know, local Republicans. Mm-hmm. They have skillfully, you know, managed to paint the get whatever they want out of Congress. And they've managed to put people in Congress to get what they want. These are not fools. They see what's happening. Mm-hmm. And if you're a Koch brother and you're part of that network and you've built this entire enterprise to preserve not only your industry, but your ideology, and you're seeing a president with one trial going on right now involving, you know, his campaign manager, right? And you're seeing the possibility of another trial coming ahead involving his personal lawyer, right? I mean, if you're a Koch brother and you've managed to saying to yourself, I got to back away from this immediately.
One other thing that I really want to say, and that is, let's go back to McConnell and Ryan for a moment. Yes, they have a real problem in that the Republicans are solidly behind Trump. On the other hand, it is interesting to watch both of those men say they are not going to allow the firing of Mueller. And that is an indication that they are hedging their bets to the degree that they want something over his head. And that takes a little guts.
Yeah, a little. But I still maintain the Republican Party is over. And that's so bad for democracy, because we need vibrant multi-parties. But the Republican Party has not stood up to Trump on the worst things.
Well,
but
you think that's not over?
Can't you say the same thing for the Democratic Party that abandoned the values of its base?
No, I think
why Hillary lost, by the way.
I think the Democratic Party, there's a lot of spirited debate. People fight with each other. They disagree with each other. I think in the Republican Party, everyone is bowing to Donald Trump. He's not a Republican. He's just all about himself.
You are what
but
you
Democrats
say you
have bowed to the financial industry, even under Obama, under Clinton. Bill Clinton was the one who opened up trading relations with China.
Look, I both are not serving the public interest, but I think people need to focus on, since Trump came into office, the Republican Party as an institution is diminished.
So do you think they're going to divide? What I'm saying is that you could say that about the Republican Party. What I'm also saying is that it's so easy to be opposed to Trump and create this veneer that you're true to your ideals, except that when we had President Obama in office and he was championing the issue of affordable health care, I didn't see too many Democrats stepping up and really defending the Health Care Act.
Well, of course you did. They voted for it. Some of them gave up their seats in Congress.
I didn't see were too many people standing by the president, standing by the Affordable Health Care Act, as this president was being attacked and maligned every single day.
Big money goes to Democrats as well. So if you look at the healthcare industry and the pharmaceutical industry, I mean, there was probably a reason that people weren't standing up supporting it.
And to your point earlier, I mean, look, first of all, we're going to be able to beat back all of these challenges when we start being Americans again and stop being, well, I'm going to I'm a Republican and I'm a Democrat. I'm an independent. No, you got to be American again and pursue the values of this country. The only way that Russia could have done what it did. And by the way, you know, I didn't think that I don't personally. I think personally, Vladimir sits back and goes, "I cannot believe we did this." You know,
that is a terrible Russian accent. Yeah, really, by the way.
Well, it's my professional wrestling WWF Russian. Well, Nikolai Volkov, yeah. God rest his soul. The point, however, is
there's a separate show.
Is the
going
Russians
on here.
Seized on a condition that existed here? You know, for probably the last, 10 to 15 years.
All right. Let's take a break, and we will continue when we come back. We have letters. Alan has a lot of letters. We'll get to those and much, much more right after this short break.
I don't really know a destination, but I got a feeling I...
Leon Bridges coming back into the program this morning and playing songs from President Obama's playlist. We're going to be featuring some interviews regarding the 44th President of the United States. It's his birthday tomorrow. He'll be turning 57 years old. Alan has a lot of letters in his hand. We'll go to those first, and then we'll move on to some other stuff.
Okay. Seth says, very scary to hear this from Judith. The Republican Party doesn't exist anymore. Although there is some truth to her point, Republicans appear to be much more organized than Democrats. I love hearing from Judith, and I miss Teresa Bourgeois. Okay.
We all miss Teresa.
Okay. And the Koch brothers.
She's busy with other clients.
Yeah. The Koch brothers. This has gotten bigger than Trump and the Koch brothers. The RNC is now advising donors not to subscribe to the Koch network because they are considering opening up to Democrats. This is the potential beginning of a viable third party, which will be good for the Democrats. I'm not so sure about that. Third parties can be dangerous, and they don't work in this country.
I think we have to be clear, too. If the Koch brothers open up to the Democratic Party, then the Democratic Party would have to adopt the ideals of the ideology of the Koch brothers.
Sure. So right. I want to rewind the tape to before the last break when I was just mindlessly defending all Democrats, which I typically don't do. But on the health care issue, the reason we don't have single-payer health care is because the Democrats were so involved in propping up private insurance companies, which I think was a real mistake.
And Denise says, blind hatred. I haven't listened to your show for about 8 months, but listening while driving earlier, and nothing has changed. Your blind hatred for everything in capital letters, the president says it does, is so outrageous. And then a much longer letter, but we really can't.
Then he should say something intelligent and propose a good policy.
Yeah. I wrote back and said, Denise who? And
I was
Doug
hoping
says,
Denise wasn't in blind rage when she was driving or texting when she was driving.
Good point. Doug says, Anon was mentioned. What is that? Thank you, Doug. Anybody got that?
What was it?
Anon, A-N-O-N.
Anonymous? Wait, what?
No, is that the Q? It's a Q Anon. It's that organization that is, mm-hmm. I mean, these
conspiracy.
Are people who are absolutely, and I don't mind saying it, y'all are crazy. Crazy conspiracy theorists, people who interpret commas or the lack of commas to be signals about deep state corruption. Y'all are crazy.
Okay.
and they're very prominent at the Trump rallies.
Yes.
Thank you, Doug. And thank you.
That clears it up, David. Okay. Thank you.
Our Jeremy says, simple truth, simple. Putin wants to weaken America by encouraging the discord that is making America dysfunctional. He wants Trump to win. Trump wins, and he does his best to increase and divide the dysfunction in America, full stop.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what's interesting is I think we all know what Putin's goal is, right? We've heard this man lament about the fact that their best days of Russia have gone by, and he wants to go back and reclaim,
right.
those sovereign nations now. So what does Putin want to do? He wants to make Russia great again, right?
Yeah.
And he has Trump, before Trump went to the Helsinki summit, remember that week he had attacking.
I want to call that Helsink-us summit.
Very good, yeah. Very good.
Keith says, Republican violence, Koch brothers versus Trump. In the current important election cycle, I do enjoy seeing Republican or Republican on Republican violence. The Republicans are now biting the hand that feeds them for all these years. Will this lead to the party fracturing even further? The Koch brothers are nefarious, but they do make a good point about Trump's horrible trade policies. Many Americans will be hurt in the policies, including myself. My industry doesn't tell us what it is. My industry will be looking at 25% tariffs starting in September.
The Kochs are playing the long game, though. I think they can very easily stomach 4 years of a Republican president they don't like. They've got enough support in Congress. So this is just the cost of doing business.
But remember, it's not just the Koch brothers. We also have the Mercers,
right,
which they gave a huge amount of money to our incumbent local Congress member, John Faso, which might explain why he votes so out of the mainstream for his congressional district. But we know the Kochs. Some people know the Mercers. There's a lot of
right.
these
The Koch brothers is kind
guys.
Of a metaphor for okay. that the whole, you know, tidal wave of dark money that's been coming into politics.
And Joseph says, miles per gallon, it seems that the Democrats can't get anything quite right, although many of us, myself included, care very strongly about the climate effects of climate change. Many, if not most of the voters, see abstract. The proper way to approach people is to appeal to their pocketbooks. More miles per gallon is the only way to push these higher CAFE standards because everyone wants better mileage. Have a great weekend.
So if car companies choose to go by the, you know, Trump's proposed standards and lower their fuel economy standards, there's going to be other car companies that are going to try to up it, and that's how capitalism and competition works. So it's self-defeating.
The problem for
that's what happened in the '70s with the Japanese imported cars.
The problem for auto manufacturers, however, is this. If you're going to have attorney generals and you're going to have states that are going to individually be suing, you know, the federal government, how do you plan for the future if you're manufacturing vehicles? You can't make a car
right.
for California and make a car for Alabama.
Right.
You know, okay. so all of this confusion, you know, it quite honestly, it's going to cause a lot of disruption in the marketplace for vehicles.
And I have a first degree relative who just bought a Jeep. So I want to make it clear that everyone is not interested in better mileage, gas mileage. When I raised it with him, he says he likes the look of it.
Well, there's also what's going on around the world where there's a serious effort for 100% clean cars, meaning all electric plug-ins, you know, and if you plug into solar or wind, even better. But this is so outside the mainstream in terms of what's happening worldwide.
I think worldwide, I mean, if you're talking about China, right? I mean, China has to get its act together in terms of efficiency because you can't see
yes.
your neighbor, okay? Right. That's a problem.
You often can't open the windows when you are in Chinese cities because air quality is so bad. Mm. We don't want to go there.
Deb says, I have heard earlier in a week that on WMC that $380 million was given to several states to address voting concerns. I know that there was an attempt to do that. I don't know that it happened.
I thought Congress chose not to
act. Yeah, I thought they turned that down.
Yeah. Okay, and
Mitch
it's a longer letter, which I'm not reading here.
There's no Republican Party.
And high panel, said Frederica, do you think that the competition for buyers will cause the mileage to get better? I hope the car companies will continue to improve, if not for the environment, at least for the money. Europe is going to all electric. If international trade survives Trump, they will want to market in Europe, and that's Ricky from Troy. All right. And Julia says, fuel efficiency. The White House logic is that increasing fuel economy raises traffic fatalities. Then the obvious solution is to raise the price of gas. But I don't think that would go over very well.
Well, there is serious discussion about a carbon tax that Congress is not embracing. And unfortunately, the most serious carbon tax proposal, which is advanced by the oil industry, the nuclear industry, and even the wind industry, has a poison pill in it that if Congress does a $40 a ton carbon tax, it would include liability waiver for oil and gas companies for damages they caused in the area of climate change, and also knocks out EPA's authority to regulate carbon. Mm. So Congress is not going to do anything helpful in the near term.
Not this Congress.
But I'm afraid even
Right.
If one of the houses flips after November, you might see this bizarro trade-off between a carbon tax and oil and gas liability.
And Mark says fuel and oil. It should be no surprise that Trump is lowering fuel efficiency standards. Someone has to pay for all the new oil and gas mining on federal lands, and it's us.
Well, ask yourself this question. Does this particular proposal assist Vladimir Putin and his economy at all?
Good point.
You know?
Well, we are exporting a lot of gas. Yeah. And I think this fuel efficiency standard is all about pleasing the oil industry. It's not to please the car industry. It's to please the oil industry.
Yeah. And
sure.
Two more
but when your entire economy is rooted in oil production.
All right, two more letters, and then we go into the bonus round. Go ahead.
Okay, today's discussion concerning California emission standards. What happened to states' rights? The Republican Party has always stood for states' rights until this administration. The same can be said concerning the proposed national firearms permit. If this Congress, Democrats had any... I'll read it the way that I think it was intended. If the Democrats in this Congress had any scruples, they would seize on this and never let up. And that's John from Bethlehem.
There's no Republican Party.
John,
they don't believe in state rights.
I just wish you'd look up state rights and the root of that word before you just toss it.
They believe
there.
In states' rights when it's convenient to the policies they're proposing.
Sure. And Robert wants us to, Bob from Schenectady says, Cafe, good morning, panel. First, to get better mileage is progressive. Republicans can't have that. Second, the majority of Trump's base drive pickup trucks.
Oh,
I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
I'd like to get
mean. All right.
Well, I'd like to get
you know, we've heard a lot about Obama's playlist, but I'm curious about Alan's playlist.
Yeah, the Weavers. We played it the other day on my birthday.
Yeah, we played selections from it.
From the Weavers.
All right. Okay, bonus round, quick. Aaron Pasitti, adding 157,000 jobs in July. Jobs report.
Yes, jobs report is good, but not great. On average, over the past 12 months, the U.S. economy added 203,000 jobs a year. It was 157,000 in July. Don't read too much into a small dip. These data can be erratic. It was less than expectations. The unemployment rate went back down to 3.9%. Wages continue to remain low and growing at an exceptionally slow rate of 2.7%. The kind of alarming one was that the average hours worked by an average employee actually went down, and that's one of the leading indicators economists look at in terms of a recession brewing.
You think there is one coming?
There's always one coming.
It's
a matter of when.
Well, come on. No. Don't hedge here. Just tell us when. And
No, I sell that information to the highest bidder. I'm an economist, Alan.
I got to do it for free on the radio. Okay.
Or take his class at Siena College. Yeah,
that's right. Yes. Second issue, Jim Acosta, the correspondent for CNN, went toe-to-toe with Sarah Huckabee Sanders at yesterday's briefing, was demanding an answer that does she feel that journalists are the enemy of the people, as the president has asserted many, many times. They went back and forth. Finally, it was a tense moment. She refused to say that the media was not the enemy of the people, and then Jim Acosta stormed out of the room. The question before the panel is what do we make of that?
I'm quoting myself from 7:45. There are a couple of things here. Number one, some of his feckless colleagues, and I do mean feckless, criticized him for being a showboater. But I think his point is so well taken that, you know, there are people who are saying, well, she's just the press secretary. She's not. She doesn't speak for Trump. Well, yes, she does. And that's been made clear all along.
But you would hope
and she says so. It's the president. I represent what the president says.
And you would hope that the press secretary of all people would at least have some respect for the press and not feel that they're the enemy.
You would hope.
Well, you know, what did Sarah Huckabee Sanders do before becoming press secretary? I just know.
She worked for Jim Henson. She was a puppeteer.
a Muppet,
well,
perhaps.
She stayed a Muppet.
I don't think she has any loyalty to the institution of free press. But at the same time, I think Jim Acosta was a little out of bounds because, of course, she's not going to say, I disagree with the president. And what I notice when she does her briefings is she's often reading statements. So this is all vetted. She doesn't really have her own thoughts. It was an unfair fight. And I thought, I of course don't think anyone should say the press is the enemy of the people. But I thought Acosta was a little out of bounds. It was more about him.
Well, it was very much about him. And also, we should note that, but this is after the rally on Monday.
Yeah, so this this guy, because he was one of the first reporters to actually have the fortitude to speak up to the president, to challenge the president.
Which we appreciate.
He has been targeted ever since. He shows up at these rallies, and the guy has a legitimate concern for his safety and the safety of the people and the staff for CNN and other reporters. And so I think it was so appropriate for him to take that issue on. And I think that
he's threading the needle.
What we get lost here in, we are completely lost in the fact that you have the president of the United States of America saying this about the press.
Okay? Right, you are, David, and wrong to those people. Judith is one of them who thinks that he was out of line,
and that serves Trump's interest because if he can convince, whether it's just his base or some other people, that you can't trust the press, who do you turn to for the truth?
Yeah.
Well, you turn to the
strong man.
Right, exactly.
Turn to the strong man.
Of course. It just wasn't a productive exchange. What did he think she was going to say?
That's right. What was going to happen?
But he knew what she was going to say, and good for her making her say it.
But press secretaries are spinsters. She could have said that, yes, we the Trump administration feels that some of the reporting on him has been unnecessarily harsh, but not...
She read a prepared statement, which, like her boss, was a list of grievances. She even went into, when she went to the restaurant and the comedian
The problem here is that
makeup.
We live in the United States of America, and this is the fourth estate. I'm an elected official. Mm-hmm. I'm not really crazy about some of the articles that are written about me that criticize my performance. I can be frustrated, but that's the absolute right of the press
to
continuously. Absolutely.
Fundamental to
democracy.
And you look at every totalitarian regime that ever was, and the first thing to go is the press.
But you like us, right?
Well,
I love you guys. Okay, but let me just say this because I know we've been doing a lot of environmental things. I just want to take my hat off to the U.S. Attorney's Office for putting together what is what would otherwise be a very boring paper caper and creating breathing life into this case and getting the attention that this case needs because everybody's talking about ostrich jackets.
Manafort, yes. Paul Manafort. All right, we're gonna we're done for the day. Did everybody have fun? Everybody good? Okay, you didn't have fun?
Oh yeah.
Okay, good. All right.
I meant something else.
All right. We'll be back after this.